Job chapter 38, 1 through 18. Then the Lord answered Job from the whirlwind, "Who is this that questions my wisdom with such ignorant words? Brace yourself like a man, because I have some questions for you, and you must answer them. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you know so much. Who determined its dimensions and stretched out the surveying line? What supports its foundations, and who laid its cornerstone? As the morning stars sang together, and all the angels shouted for joy, who kept the sea inside its boundaries as it burst from the womb? And as I clothed it with clouds and wrapped it in thick darkness, for I locked it behind barred gates, limiting its shores, I said, this far and no farther will you come. Here your proud waves must stop. Have you ever commanded the morning to appear and caused the dawn to rise in the east? Have you made daylight spread to the ends of the earth to brighten an end to the sky's wickedness? As the light approaches, the earth takes shape like clay pressed beneath a seal. It is robbed in brilliant colors. The light disturbs the wicked and stops the arms that is raised in violence. Have you explored the springs from which the seas come? Have you explored their depths? Do you know where the gates of death are located? Have you seen the gates of utter gloom? Do you realize the extent of the earth? Tell me about it if you know."
Thank you, Logan. Well done. Good job. Let's pray. Gracious God, may your questions enter our hearts, and may we hear your word. Take me out of your way, and we ask that you would speak this morning in Jesus' precious name. Amen. Who trumps why? Let me repeat that. Who trumps why? Faith is always better than explanations. Faith is always better than explanations. But it's explanations that we always go for when tragedy invades our lives. We always want to know when someone dies unexpectedly, when a marriage goes off the rails, when an illness all of a sudden strikes somebody we love, we lose our jobs, or betrayal is dropped in on us. We want to know why. We want to somehow make sense. We want to somehow pick the pieces of our broken world and stick them back together again. And we believe that if we just understood why, we might have a better understanding. And if we understand, we might have a reason how this could have been prevented or what we can do to somehow make this better. We want to know why. If we know why, then we can make it better. Well, yes, no, maybe. The hard thing about explanations is that once we have them, they don't really change anything. They don't take away pain. Reasons don't eliminate suffering. They don't reverse the suffering. They provide little, if any, comfort at all. Explanations, the very things that we chase, sometimes make things worse. Sometimes they point out what we have done. The reasons may point to things that we don't want to think about. They might point out to foolishness, carelessness, selfishness, hatred, or simply there is no reason at all. That's the worst. We just don't know. It is senseless. There is no way of making sense of an act that has none. Who's the question that we need to focus on? Who is the question that we need to anchor ourselves in? Who is the question that we need to wrap with both arms around us? Who can comfort us? Who can help us? Who can heal us? Who can give us the strength for the future? Who can give us a hope? Who can we cling to? His name is Elohim, Yahweh, God, Lord Almighty, and His Son, Jesus Christ. It is who and what we believe and our faith in Him, our trust in Him, that will allow us to take the next step. Who will walk us through the fog of pain and grief and lets us know that there is hope and there is something that we can do? Who points us in the right direction? Do we trust God? In all that we're going through, do we have faith in God who loves us? That's the question of the morning. That's the question that Jesus, that God is asking Job in the last four chapters. And the underlying question of all the things that he asks and challenged Job with is, do you trust me? Do you trust me? Job is a book that everyone knows, but few people enjoy reading. It's a long, painful, 42-chapter activity of frustration. It provides no answers. It gives no solutions. It just says, trust me. Just trust me. There is more that we don't know about Job than what we do know. We aren't sure when he lived, but we know he probably lived, we guess, and I mean guess, that he was somewhere around the second millennium, probably around, not too distant from Abraham, not too distant from that whole generation. We're not really sure where he lived. We know he probably didn't live in Palestine. He probably lived far to the east. Again, probably, we know. What we do know about him is he was the wealthiest man of his age. One of the wisest and most respected men of his community. He was married. We don't know the name of his wife, but we know he has 10 children. We don't know what their names are. He has numerous servants, and he has enormous herds and flocks in the thousands. He is extraordinarily wealthy. We also know that he is someone to whom God had a great regard. He is described by God as someone who is blameless and upright, who fears God and shuns evil. God tells him twice about that. That's about as good an endorsement from God that you're going to get. But in a matter of days, everything that Job has held on to, everything that Job has, everything that he lives around is going to be taken away from him. You see, Job has now become the center of a confrontation between God and Satan. And God lifts up Job as a great example, and Satan says, fine. You just give him all that stuff. You take away all his things, and he will curse you to his face. And for some unknown reason, God says, okay, do it, but you can't touch him. All in a day, all but three servants are dead. All of his crop, all of his herds are gone. And in one day, all 10 children are killed. How do you survive that? How do you survive? It's one thing to lose your finances. It's another thing to lose your children. How do you survive losing 10 children? Shortly after, he, as if that was not enough, Satan is now allowed to attack him physically, because in all of this, Job never once lost his integrity. He didn't blame God. He said, naked I come, naked I'll die. You know, blessed be the name of the Lord. And so all of a sudden, from the bottom of his feet to the top of his head, he is covered with painful sores. One Bible calls them boils. And he is in agony. And now his wife comes and offers her helpful advice. Are you still hanging on to your integrity? Curse God and die. That's what I want to tell you. Curse God and die. His friends come to comfort him. Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. Wow, what a trio. And in the next 28 chapters, they try and explain to Job that all of this is somehow his fault, that God is punishing his sins. Because in their minds, God never punishes good people. God only punishes bad people. But we all know that sometimes bad things happen to good people, don't we? Well, not in their theology. And Job says, what did I do? Point to it. Tell me what I have done. Tell me what I've done. And soon he gets tired of them, and he looks at God and says, I want you to tell me the same thing. God, you tell me what I have done. Point out my sin. If you point out my sin, you can kill me. But if you can't, you have to tell me why this is happening. You have to tell me why. And after a while, Bildad, Zophar, and Eliphaz kind of lose their steam, and a young man by the name of Elihu come up, and he adds three more chapters, but doesn't add anything to it. And it's amazing that God just kind of comes out. In chapter 38, God shows up. God shows up. And it's not quite what we were anticipating. Just watch how God takes charge. Then the Lord spoke out of the storm, the whirlwind. All of a sudden, God comes in. You know, with Elijah, he wasn't in the storm. He wasn't in that force F5 tornado-like wind. Here he is. He is speaking. And he comes out in the storm, the might, and the way he is normally depicted. And of course, God comes and says, who is this that somehow obscures my plans without knowledge? Who is it that darkens my counsel in ignorance? Why are you speaking of what I am doing? You speak without knowledge. You don't know anything. And here you get to be a little uncomfortable. Don't you get, you know, here Job is suffering. He's been pained. He's been attacked by his best friends. And all of a sudden God says, what's the matter with you? Why are you speaking like an ignoramus? You're thinking, God of all comfort? God of compassion? Where is that? You and I, we speak all the time in ignorance. We can't help it. You know what Isaiah says about God? Who can fathom the spirit of the Lord or instruct the Lord as his counselor? Whom did the Lord consult to enlighten him, man? Who taught him the right way? Who was it that taught the Lord knowledge or showed him the path of understanding? We know so little about God. Even with all that we have been shown, we don't know almost anything. And we often speak in ignorance about God. By the way, that's Isaiah chapter 40. And then he says to Job, hey, And I like the way that Logan read it. Brace yourselves like a man. Actually, it says, gird your loins. I like to say, put your big boy pants on. I'm going to ask you some questions, and now you're going to answer me. You're going to answer the questions. And in chapter 1 to 18, he gives him 8. Job is no longer the questioner. Job is now the defendant. And God says, let me ask you something. Where were you when I laid out the earth's foundations? And what's Job supposed to say? Vacation? I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't even born yet. Tell me about the origins of the planet. Where were you when everything came together? Now, if you as a person who has some degree of understanding, you have taken science and geology courses, you kind of look at this and you go, what are they talking about? Keep in mind, we're talking about 4,000 years ago. And their understanding of how the cosmos and the earth was put together is much different than the way we see it. They see it not so much in scientific terms as they do in terms that made sense to them in their day. Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Just give me the basics. Were you there? You can't even comprehend about it. What, you know, tell me what the dimensions of the earth are. You know the dimensions of the earth is that around the equator is 24,901 miles around the equator. If you go from North Pole to South Pole like this, it's a little smaller. It is 24,860 miles. It's about 40 miles shorter. That's the dimensions of the earth. Who marked them off? Who made sure the earth was this size? Not bigger, not smaller. Who marked off the dimensions? Surely you know. And you're thinking to yourself, God, you're getting a little sarcastic here. Oh, we just talk, we somehow put our expectations on God. And that's what Job has done. He says, God, you need to act in a way that I can somehow grab a hold of. And God says, no, I don't. I don't have to act in that way. I have to act in a way that glorifies who I am and gives you a chance to understand who you're dealing with so you can trust me. So you can have faith in me. You can depend on me, and I will get you through this. Who measured it? Who stretched the measuring line out? Who's the architect? Who is the one that laid things out? Who is the one that made sure everything was where it is supposed to be? Job can be glad that he didn't go on to the celestial creation as well, but he held him just into our earth. Tell me, where are the footings of the earth? Who laid the cornerstone? How deep are the footings of the earth? I always like asking Jim questions about building because he knows more about building than I will ever know. And would you want to live in a house that I built? I'm thinking no. Jim wouldn't want to live in a treehouse that I built. Normally, for a two-story building, how far do the footings have to go down, Jim?
4 to 16 inches.
Pardon? But they have to be pretty good sized footings, don't they? And you made them, and you use what? Rubber?
Cement.
He knows how to do this stuff. He knows that. Where are the footings of the earth? They thought the world was built on 7 pillars. They thought the earth was built on 7 large pillars. That's the cosmology of the ancients. They understood that the earth existed between the seas. You have the sea here, and then behind the sky, there was another massive, chaotic seas that the night sky, the sky that you and I see, the stars, hold back. And that's where creation is. Where are the footings? Who set the cornerstones? When the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy. And then he says, Job, let me ask you a question. Who shut the seas behind the doors? Here's another difference between the ancients and ourselves. We love oceanfront property, don't we? We love going to the beach. We love going there. There's nothing better than going to the beach, going out there, going to sit over at Empire Beach or going to one of the places along there. We used to go to Minert Park. We loved going to Minert Park and just north of Muskegon. You go in there and you just look out there and it's just gorgeous. You're sitting out there and you just watch the sun go down and there's a little boat here and a ship there and it's beautiful. Or you go down to Florida and you look over on the Atlantic or you look over on the Gulf and you look at that and you think that's amazing. And God says, yeah, you enjoy that. That scared the death of all the ancients. They thought the sea is chaotic, it's unpredictable, it's dangerous, storms can come up so fast. And they don't know what to do with it. And it's where the abyss is held. You know the abyss that goes down the ancient Sheol and the dead? That's where it was. And they would look at the sea and they were frightened of it. And he said, who put the sea behind the doors? Who guarded it? Who shut it up? Who made it predictable? Who made it not chaotic? Because when it bursts from the womb, and when I made the clouds as a garment, a swaddling clothes for them, that's what happened. I put it there and I nurtured it, and it's not something I see as chaotic. It's something part of my creation that I love. And I fixed the limits for it. And I put the doors and the bars in place. And I said, look, here's how far you can come, and you can't come any farther. If you've ever seen a flood, you know the damage that water can do. When we went down, and we went down with a church in Naperville, and we went down to help out in New Orleans. And we went down into the areas where the houses had been impacted, and we were working in an area where all of a sudden houses, three bedroom houses, all of a sudden, because of the power of the water, were just swept off their floors and were taken away. It's really odd to see houses with water lines up at the roof and tires and other junk laying up on top because that's just where it floated, it ended. When the waters break, the destructive power is amazing. And God said, I said, here's how far you can come. Here is where your limits are. Here is where your proud waves will halt. God said, that which is so chaotic, I have stopped. I've restrained them. Here it ends. And then he looks at Job and says, have you ever given orders to the morning? Have you ever decided to let's show? Have you ever started a day? Have you ever said, day, let's go? Come on. Come on. Rise up, O sun. Time to get things going. We might think this is silly because we know that the earth, you know, the earth rotates around on its axis and that it orbits around the sun, and we know that now we are getting longer. Isn't it nice to have longer days? Every day we get a couple extra minutes. Every day, every week, we get maybe another 5-8 minutes, and all of a sudden, someday in March, maybe March 21, we're going to get 12 hours of light, 12 hours of darkness, and then it's going to get lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter until all of a sudden sadness and, you know, all of a sudden June 21st comes around. It's the longest day of the year, and then it gets less and less and less and less until it goes off. We just keep doing the cycle over and over again. Did you know that the tilt of the earth, I can't remember how many degrees it is, that if it was a few degrees off this way or a few degrees off this way, life would not be like we know it now.
23.5 degrees.
Thank you, Lord. Thank you. You sound just like Chick. 23.5 degrees. If it wasn't that, we wouldn't have life as we know it. And God said, have you ever, were you there when things were set up? Were you there? Were you there when the earth takes the night like a blanket and shakes it like a blanket, all of the wickedness out there? Because in their mind, wickedness loved the darkness. And the earth takes shape like the clay under the seal, or its features stand out like those of the darkness. Have you ever seen the morning when it first comes up and you can see all the contours of the earth and you can see all of the characteristics of the land because the light shows it so vividly? That which the darkness has hidden, the light shows gloriously. The wicked are denied their light. They don't get light. They're stuck in the will, in the evilness, and their arrogance is broken. Their arrogance is broken. And now God begins to throw questions at Job so fast he has no hope of ever even answering. All he can do is admit, like he does in chapter 40, I'm unworthy. How can I reply to you? I put my hand over my mouth. I spoke once, but I have no answer. Twice, but I will say no more. But God keeps asking. Have you ever journeyed to the springs of the sea? Have you ever found out where the water comes from? Have you ever gone out and see where I store all the waters for the sea? Or walked in the recesses of the deep? Of course he hasn't. Has the gates of death ever been opened up to you? Have you ever seen the gates of the deepest darkness? Well, no, death is off limits. I don't want to go there. Why do I want to go see Sheol? Why do I want to go down to those gates? Have you comprehended the vastness of the earth? Have you ever thought about the sheer majesty of all that there is? Tell me if you know. You know that in his whole speech that God gives him, chapter 38, 39, 40, and 41, God never explains to Job what happened. He never explained why his life was thrown around, why all those people had to die. He gives no account of himself to Job. He never got what you and I might think of as satisfaction. But it's interesting that at the end of this, he says to the three friends of Job, I'm kind of angry at you. You have not spoken of me rightly like my servant Job has. In fact, Job has to sacrifice for you or I'm going to punish you. He has to speak on your behalf. And Job does. And it says at the end of this, he got twice as much as he had before. He got his 10 children back, but he got twice as many animals, twice as many servants, twice as much wealth. He was the wealthiest and most well-respected person of all of his age, and he had another 10 children. So what are you and I supposed to make out of this? After you and I sojourn through all of the chapters in the book of Job and we come to the end of it, what are you and I supposed to come to? How are we supposed to understand Job's experience and our experiences as well? How do we make sense when all of a sudden unexpected or horrendous tragedy enters in my life and God says, look, the only question that really matters is this. Do you trust me? I know you're suffering. I know that you're in pain. I know your expectations have been dashed. I know that you're disappointed. I know that you're angry. I know that you are hurt. Do you trust me? Do you believe in the love that I have for you, the love that my son Jesus has for you? Do you trust me? We should look one more time to the book of Isaiah, again, chapter 40. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary. His understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary. Young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. Do you trust me? If you trust me, you'll get through this. If you trust me, you will get where you need to be. Do you trust me? Let me ask you a few questions. Where were you? I wasn't there. I don't understand. My abilities and my strength is limited. What I can do is the only thing I can do, and that is to say, God is my God, and I will believe in him. God is my God, and I will trust him. And I will hold to him, and I will love him, and I will follow him. I may not understand, but I have hope. And I will rise up on wings as eagles, and I will run and not get weary, and I will walk, and I will not faint. Not because of who I am, but the one that I serve. Do I trust him? Well, the answer is yes. It's always yes. Amen.